This is Scott Allen from odecode.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 8 of Herding Code, a podcast on general interesting technology topics in the field of software development. So this week's episode, we're going to talk a little bit about virtualization and particular how developers use it, and is it interesting? Is it useful for people? Who wants to start? Are you guys using virtualization as part of your development work?
I found virtual PCs, I've mostly used the Microsoft product, to be indispensable, mostly in the sense that when I need to develop under different environments, so sometimes I need to develop under a beta of a service pack, like in the case of Visual Studio 2008, and I don't want to install that on my primary machine, I found virtual PCs to be great for that kind of work. And by the way, I got this really nice birthday gift a couple years ago. It's a clock that sits in my office and makes bird noises on the hour. So that was me.
Nice.
Awesome.
Thank God it's not the singing bass. Virtualization is so good, it makes the birds sing, the butterflies dance. Nature is happy when it's virtualized.
So my experience, I've used virtual machines, and I still continue to use them pretty regularly. Like recently I was working on a website that had to support IE6 through IE8. Firefox 2 and 3 and Safari. And so pretty much no matter how you work that, you're going to have to, you're going to have to use some sort of VM. But I've kind of been disenchanted with them over the years. I really kind of jumped into virtual PC a while ago at my work, and we noticed that all the developers were taking a long time to get set up. It could take up to a week to get a development environment set up because there was DCOM and there was classic ASP and DB2 and all kinds of crazy stuff. And so I said, hey, guys, I'm going to build out an awesome image. You know, we built out like a hierarchy of images, and then developers would show up and I'd have a DVD burned and I'd just say, copy this on your machine and you're all set, you know, and it ended up, I thought it was working. And then finally one day a developer said, this sucks. And he's like, do you really expect me to develop like this? And I sat with him and I was like, you're right. You know, it really did. It was, his machine was incredibly slow. He couldn't run Outlook at the same time as his virtual PC. Because his virtual PC is running IE, and he was running a database server, and he's running Visual Studio, and he's running the source control client. So long story short is I found them to be really inefficient, and I agreed with him, and I've kind of backed off since then. I've just really found, and I continue to use them. I've had people say it's gotten better since then, but when I use them, I continue to find that that's a problem. It's just really inefficient, an inefficient way to use the machine. And so it is definitely a trade-off.
So how is that virtualization's fault? I think he needs a beefier machine.
Well, just to be fair, I mean, those were pretty beefy machines at the time. We had, every developer had between 3 and 4 gig of RAM. They had, I really got extra funding, you know, like I wrangled extra money and extra RAM for every developer. And so it is true that you can always try and outdo the problem with a beefier machine, but I think that at that point you're saying, well, spend a bunch of extra money just so that you can use a virtual machine. And so I just think the point is that there is a trade-off.
So there's an art almost to tuning virtual machines so they can run as tight as possible and still work. I've seen Brad Wilson and Hanselman, Scott Hanselman, that is, say that somewhere between 700, 800 megs of virtual RAM per machine actually works pretty good for demos and even some light testing. I usually set I set up Server 2003 virtual machines with about a gig of RAM. Now, granted, I'm not running the database server and things like that in them. I usually run that on the main box because I'm not going to be installing lots of beta software on the main box. So the database server can sit there and I can connect to it from within the VM through the virtual network. But I've been using VMware since at least 1999, that is. Not since it was $99 a license, which I think it was when I got it. We use it to simulate NT4 clusters or to simulate old NT4 machines. We were developing against them, and we ran the Windows 2000 beta inside of them and tested out our code for a long time. And I've used multiple virtualization kind of apps, VMware. I've used Virtual PC for Mac and PC. I've tried VirtualBox, QEMU, yeah, is a really good open source virtualization setup. And I've had a lot of people talk up VirtualBox recently. I think VirtualBox is owned by Sun. And Xen is Novell, I believe. Xen is actually more of what I think of when I'm thinking of virtualization. And I don't know if we want to talk about this right now or we want to wait. But my thinking is that the only OS that should be running on there should be a host for virtual machines. As you install apps, the virtual hard disk should be diffed out so that you can roll back the entire system to any state you want to at any time. I think that games should be distributed with their own VMs, like Linux Live CDs, and maybe even possibly apps. Apps should be run within a small, tight, virtual machine that's has just enough kernel to allow it to interact with the host OS.
Well, that actually raises an interesting issue because there's actually different kinds of virtualization. Like most of the time, I think when people talk about virtualization, they assume whole machine virtualization, a la VMware. But there's also application virtualization, which I think is what Scott's talking about. That you get with something like Softricity or there's another tool that I've forgotten the name of it. Which is something that I think a lot of people haven't experimented with, and it'd be interesting to see if that becomes more prevalent.
Yeah, I recently wrote a post on that where I was saying I thought that virtualizing entire machines was not I like virtualization, but I think virtualizing an entire operating system is pretty heavy-handed, and I kind of ended up talking about some like. There's a Green Border, there's Sandboxy, that's Sandboxie. There's something called Xenocode, Xenocode. That one's not free. It costs like $500. And then there's also that Softricity that you were talking about, SoftGrid. But I think that if you virtualize an entire machine, it's kind of like the idea of if you had two neighbors who couldn't get along. And so instead of dealing with that problem, one of those neighbors or both of them, you make a Berlin Wall and you build two separate cities and you have two gas departments and two electricity departments and two postal systems and all that. And then you've got another neighbor that doesn't get along. So you build another wall and you subdivide out. And so you're building out 50 different cities when all you need is for your 50 different citizens to get along somehow. Which is kind of maybe I hope I didn't stretch that analogy too far, but the idea is I'd like to be able to trust small individual applications to run without needing another copy of the entire kernel, another copy of notepad.exe, and all the baggage that comes along with that.
So yeah, I'm down with that. I'm down with not having to recreate the entire Earth every time you want to launch an app. But I don't know that with today's, you know, current state of operating systems that we can really count on our citizens to get along. Considering that if I open up Firefox, I sound like a robot on Skype. But I don't know that. I don't necessarily know that having Skype and Firefox in their own virtual machine would help that matter. But I don't know. I can certainly. When I think of something that needs to be virtualized to a live CD, I think of something like a game or a ready to boot server that is really going to need all of the hardware available to it, and you don't want. So look at the graphics that were possible on the Xbox, which was like what, a Pentium 2 CPU in there, compared to the current PCs at the time and the horsepower that was required to get the same kind of graphical level. I was always amazed at how good Halo and Fable and some of the other games looked, like Doom 3. They were able to run Doom 3 on an Xbox. So when I think that certain applications like games are ripe for that kind of virtualization, and server OSs. I think that running a server off of, you know, being able to boot it up on there and just have that virtualized, and if you need to spin up a new database session, you load up just enough machine for what the application needs.
Well, you know, server is an interesting thing because, like, I've argued back and forth with Jeff Atwood on this because he runs his blog in a VM on the server. And to me, that seems like not really the right use of the hardware because, like, you've got one application running on the server, right? You've got the web server and, you know, and maybe a database. But that's pretty much it. And so that being the case, I would think that that's the one time you don't, and it's not like it's any crazy beta thing or anything like that. It's probably a really old, whatever, IIS or Apache. And so I think that for a lot of server instances, unless you're going to be frequently moving things between servers, that I don't think you really get any advantage out of that. And what I don't see that you would get a lot of advantage out of virtualizing a website, especially because you can just save out your database, FTP down your content, and there's your site. I mean, so it really seems like it's very easy to just back up and move the entire site anyways. So I think that a rule of thumb or something that I would look at for virtualizing a server application is something that you're either going to move on a regular basis or is very difficult to set up. Takes more than 10 minutes to install and run.
So I've had a few problems with virtualization. Overall, I'm a big fan. It's helped me a lot, but there's a couple things that drive me nuts. One is performance, and you can go out on the internet and find all sorts of performance tips. Probably the biggest one is to run your virtual PC on a separate spindle. So even when I'm on my laptop, if I'm trying to use a virtual PC, then I try to use an external hard drive, which is sometimes difficult with a laptop because there's been times when I've closed the lid on my laptop and then I open it back up a couple hours later and my virtual PC will just blue screen. And I understand that's probably not there's not a simple solution to that problem because it involves drivers and USB buses and all sorts of communication issues. So that's a problem. But the thing that really irritates me about virtual PC is clipboards. Using the clipboard when I have virtual PC open and trying to, you know, I go to Google all the time and just find code snippets and just paste them into products and then compile it and ship it. It's supposed to be a joke. But the clipboard breaks quite often, clipboard chaining. So that's one problem. The other problem I've noticed that's really sort of distressing is that I've set up virtual PCs on my desktop with, say, like a Windows Server 2003 virtual PC or a Windows Server 2008 virtual PC. And then when I go on the road, I try to move those virtual PCs to my laptop, and the operating system wants to be reactivated, which is a real problem.
Well, it's a real Windows problem.
This raises another question, which is about which virtualization tools you use. You guys have been talking about virtual PC. Is that the tool of choice for you guys? And if so, why that versus VMware?
Well, I've used VMware in the past, but it's been a few years. I mostly used it before virtual PC was available and was free, and I used it to run some Linux distributions. But when virtual PC came along, I was pretty much happy with it. And these days, I know I have at least a few associates who still swear by VMware. They say it's faster, the USB support is better. I just haven't tried it. And just as a side note, their stock tanked today. It was down like 24% or $13.
And that was because their CEO was ousted, right? They booted their CEO.
What I read was that their earnings are coming up this month, and they're expected to be a lot lower than the projections. So they ousted their CEO, and then the stock tanked. But it sounds like they're having a little bit of trouble in the market, a little bit of trouble selling their product, which, of course, we all know doesn't reflect on their technical capabilities at all. But
so I was running VMware for a long time, even when Microsoft acquired Virtual PC. Well, that was from Connectex, something like that, yeah. But then VMware just went all Vista with their licensing, and they had GSX and ESX and SEX servers and all sorts of junk. And the licensing, they used to have a nice hobbyist license that was like $99. Mm. You could buy it for personal use, and it was basically the same VMware workstation as you would buy if you bought the full business license. And yeah, then they just, I think they kind of priced themselves out, and they started going for more of the enterprise, the data center kinds of places.
They had an IPO.
Yeah, that was probably it. I've been reading this Wikipedia article on hypervisor, which is a general classification of a type of virtualization, of which Windows Microsoft Hyper-V is a type of. And apparently, hypervisors come in two types. Type 1, which is a native or bare metal, and type 2, which is hosted. Hosted ones are like a VMware Server, Virtual PC, QEMU, Parallels, and so forth. And type 1 includes a hypervisor, a Xen, and VMware's ESX, and K-Scott, you were saying GSX server as well. But what was interesting to me was that the, it doesn't say what the first one is. Well, it actually does. The IBM CP40 was first spun up in production in 1967. So even though virtual machines are kind of a new thing, that a lot of people are just now discovering, they've been around for, 30 plus years. It's interesting it's boring. It's boring to see how everything is kind of coming around full circle. So as kind of a side note, a lot of this, let's talk about virtualization and the virtualization of maybe user sessions on PCs or of virtualization of applications kind of reminds me of when you would log into the old timeshare, like VAX machines or the old Unix ones, where you basically get a little shell. Linux for a long time has had the opportunity to run what they call user mode Linux. So basically what happens is you run your little shell, whatever shell you're running it under its own kind of kernel. You run your web server in user mode, and even if someone does compromise it, they don't have access to the underlying system, because there is no underlying system. It's just a virtual kernel that it's running under.
So back on the which VM product topic.
Back on track.
I have long been and continue to be a huge VMware fan. Even beyond, you know, given the fact that Virtual PC is free for, at least for, well, I guess it's free for everybody now. But yeah, I still think VMware is worth worth ponying up the money for. And one of the really killer features that I am just addicted to is snapshot management. In VMware, you can have one base VM and build up a tree of snapshots where you can go back to any of your previous snapshots and use that as the root for a new branch of, you know, software configuration. So instead of having 10 different complete VMs for all the different scenarios, you know, you can just have one sort of base VM and then just have all these different offshoots which have different versions of software installed. And I just found it to be such an incredible time saver and an incredible disk space saver, and that feature alone is totally killer to me. And it also has other awesome stuff like USB support, and it's got an integrated debugging agent for working with Visual Studio. It's got multi-monitor support, and something that I'm really excited about, finally in the version 6.5 that's in beta, they're releasing the Unity technology, which lets you run an application on a virtual machine and show the window on your host desktop as if it was running on the host desktop, which is something that Mac users have had for a while, but us poor slobby PC users haven't. So yeah, anyway, I continue to be a big fan of VMware.
VMware rocks because they have a virtual or a physical machine converter, and I've used this a couple of times. It's pretty sweet. So you can point it at a machine and it will make a copy of the machine, set up the parameters. I mean, it doesn't do things like, you know, well, we're going to virtualize out their Asus video card or NVIDIA video card. But it says things like, okay, so it's got so much RAM, and here's how the disks are set up, here's how they're partitioned, et cetera. And it kind of makes a copy and copies down the application, the settings, the OS, bit for bit from the disk. So if you are scaling up, you know, the whole point of a startup is to not try to buy too much hardware. So you start off with one physical machine, and suddenly you need to move to a data center and you want to virtualize it. You can use this tool to virtualize your server that's working and then clone it off, spin them up as new virtual machines, you know, doing all the appropriate renaming.
Okay, so one exciting thing that you can do now, I think, is that you can convert from virtual machine images to virtual PC images relatively easily. And there's a tool I found for that called, it's like VMDK to VHD. But the point there is that anything that you find in, if there's a specific feature that you find in one, or like, for instance, I've used the mono images, which are supplied as VMware images, and it's possible to convert those to virtual PC. So, also along the lines of converting a physical machine to a virtual machine, there's a virtual PC thing called Virtual Machine Migration Toolkit, which does a similar kind of thing. I think I go along with the idea that VMware is usually going to be better than virtual PC for kind of if you're using it all the time every day. But if you're using it to kind of test something out and get out of it, what I like about virtual PC is that it's a player. And the VMware has a player, but it's not really. It's a server that kind of pretends to be a player because it runs services all the time. And you can get around that. You can go in and shut down the services and all that stuff. But when you're running virtual PC, it's a program. You run it. When you're done, you shut it down, and it's just gone. There's no services running. There's no nothing. And so that's something I really like about it.
So, John, you were talking about how, you know, it's just not feasible to run your machine as a virtual machine, your main development machine. But I'm getting ready to kind of do that here. I'm running 64-bit XP, SP, whatever the 64-bit XP version is. I'm running into lots and lots of Firefox crashing problems. And a couple of them have actually locked up the system to the point where, you know, I got to hit the magic power button and hold it in for the magic, you know, 2 seconds. So for me, in terms of not losing productivity, having to just re-spin up my virtual machine sounds like a great idea. In addition to being able to install, you know, certain selfish programs like IE6 and IE7 as a diffed virtual hard disks, so that I can do testing and development. Yeah, you know, I've thought about upgrading Vista, but no one that I know that is doing development on I can't say that. I'm sure someone I know that's doing development on the Windows platform is using Vista, but no one I know seems to be happy about doing it. They seem much happier with a Windows Server 2008 than they are with Vista.
Let me just jump in and say that I'm developing on Vista, and I'm pretty happy with it. So you know one, at least.
64-bit?
Oh, 64-bit specifically. sorry, no, I'm not running 64-bit, although I was tempted to.
I think Hanselman and Atwood
maybe
are running 64-bit.
There are two people are running 64-bit Vista. It's and Jeff Atwood and Hanselman.
You know, seem to complain about driver issues from time to time on Twitter.
It goes back and forth between, like, bragging about how awesome it is and then talking about how they can't, like, use their mouse.
It was great until I tried to view a YouTube video and then everything ground to a halt. Why does Flash suck? Yeah, and you know, or God forbid they should buy a new video card and have to hunt down drivers. That's like the worst feeling in the world to have to to think, you know, when you finally get your computer stabilized and you've got it running really awesome, and then you decide to upgrade something and it's just like a cascade. That was one of the reasons that I got out of PC gaming, was because I was tired of being on the upgrade train. I liked the convenience that consoles gave me. I didn't have to worry about, you know, do I have the right driver? Do I need to get a new driver? What version of DirectX am I on now? They say they're on 10, but there was a 9B. Wasn't that 10? And, you know, and all that junk. And so the idea of having a plain Jane vanilla virtual PC that I can just spin up, because I don't need 3D graphics from my graphic card. I need something that's going to render text on a background in a window. So general plain Jane vanilla virtual PCs work just fine for me.
Well, in that case, why not just run Vista and turn off Arrow and turn off a lot of the stuff? If you want to run a light stripped down system, why not just run a light stripped down base operating system?
Well, because by the time I have enough hardware and horsepower to run Vista, even without Arrow, you know, I could be running it under XP or Linux, and just running Vista in a virtual box. And then when and if it crashes, I just have to restart. When I build my next machine, and I'm thinking about it, I'm probably going to end up with an AMD 64-bit processor. I'm going to throw as much RAM on there as I can afford, and I'll keep upgrading it until I run out of slots or it starts to have its own gravitational field. And what I'll probably be running on it is Ubuntu with VirtualBox. Either VirtualBox, or maybe I'll try running Debian with Xen, but it'll probably be Ubuntu with VirtualBox. And I'll probably be running either Windows Server 2008 or Vista inside of it, with a couple of Windows 95 VMs for games like Warcraft 2.
So when you're talking about Windows Server 2008, I'm sort of wondering about Hyper-V. I don't know if anyone's tried this out, but it's a new virtualization core that's in Server 2008. And I haven't tried it out yet, but I've been reading a little bit about it. I've read that, for one, it uses a different virtualization model that's supposed to be much better with I/O performance, that it has snapshot capabilities, that it has the ability to migrate virtual machines in a faster fashion, and that you can run it on what they call the Windows 2008 server core. So you can pretty much put a minimal installation of Windows 2008 server on a machine and be able to run virtual machines with Hyper-V without having a lot of other stuff installed. So you can really dedicate a lot of the machine's resources towards the virtual machines, which I think is good for the sort of the data center scenario. And I think we've mostly been talking about how to use it as an end user or how to use it as a developer. I do know a lot of businesses and hospitals and places that are trying to consolidate servers using virtualization technologies.
So one thing to note as I'm looking over the Hyper-V Wikipedia article is that it says here the system requirements are 64-bit, an x64-based processor.
That's true. Right. It's 64-bit, but my understanding is that this is really much different from what we're used to with virtual PC and virtual server. It's Hyper-V.
it also requires hardware-assisted virtualization. We haven't talked much about that, but that's a pretty recent, in the last 2 years, that motherboards, or BIOSes more specifically, have started to come with hardware virtualization, extensions?
Extensions, right. Maybe that would be a good point to segue into the performance tips for virtual PC. I know Mr. Galloway has a few things to say there, but the two things I know are, one is to always run your virtual machines on a different spindle. That's mostly so you can offload some of the I/O processing onto a different physical hard drive and let your host operating system keep control of the C drive or whatever. Typically what I do is on my desktop I have two hard drives, so I always run my virtual machines on a separate drive. On my laptop, I'll try to plug in an external USB drive and run my virtual machines off that, which sometimes creates different problems, and I have a story I can tell about that. But the other thing is that these hardware instructions that are dedicated toward virtualization are apparently turned off by default in any motherboard that they consider a not a server BIOS, and that's only to prevent viruses from coming in that can actually use the virtualization instructions to really take control of a machine. So if you're a developer and you're running a developer machine, you might want to go into your BIOS and enable the instructions for virtualization, then go into virtual PC and enable hardware virtualization, because that's a performance boost. What else do you have, John?
Well, yeah, first to go back to what you were talking about there with the security side of this, there was an exploit called Blue Pill, which was kind of an homage to the Matrix. It's kind of a theoretical exploit at this point, but the idea is a virtual machine manager would kind of swallow your operating system and would virtualize your operating system without it knowing, would become virtualized. And at that point, it's the hardware, right? So it can do anything it wants. Imagine if your hardware was compromised and could send emails or do whatever. So it's, I mean, you're totally screwed at that point, right? It can do anything it wants. So that's kind of an interesting thing to think about long term. But yeah, that hardware virtualization is definitely something to look at for optimizing. I saw a really interesting post just today. It's at tinyurl6amqs6. It has some kind of updated things talking about swap size for Vista, turning off system restore, talks about uninstalling and some other things. There's some really cool tools for this. I've used Invertus V Optimizer. Invertus in the past I thought was a better tool where you just attached an ISO file and it just ran and did a bunch of magic stuff. And I'm not as much of a fan as V Optimizer, but there is a freeware version and it does work. And it compresses and it really shrinks down a virtual PC image. And I believe now it also works with VMware. And there's also a Parallels Optimizer that shrinks both VMware and virtual PC images. So those are both pretty handy. There used to be a whole art and science to doing this manually. Jeff Atwood has a really good post on this. It's post number 639 for him. But now that there are free tools that'll go through and set this up for free and very quickly, I just don't see the point in step-by-step tweaking a virtual machine image in that way. Another key tip is to make sure you've installed the virtual machine additions. You can find those in the action menu under install and update virtual machine additions. And those do some nice things like capture the mouse when it moves over it, and also do clipboard sharing, some other nice things. But maybe more important is much better performance of the operating system, because it's more able to talk directly to hardware when it's possible.
One thing I'll say about performance, which is not an optimization per se, but I generally find that trying to virtualize current generation operating systems and development tools and software in general is always a little problematic. But virtualizing the previous generation of those things usually works really well. So I've had great success virtualizing XP and, at this point, Visual Studio 2005. And that works great. But if I try to do Vista in 2008, SQL Server 2008 and Analysis Server, all current generation stuff, then it's just using too much resource, and it's more than I would want to run full time in a virtual PC or in a virtual machine.
So here's my story with virtual PC. A couple years ago, I went to speak at a software development conference, and I've had this general rule ever since virtual PC was released that any product that has the word beta, CTP, or alpha in the name, I'll install it on a virtual PC and run it from there. So I think I was talking about some beta version of Visual Studio 2008. So I get up on the stage and I have my laptop open and I have a virtual PC running with Visual Studio 2008, some beta version running, and I'm all set to go. And I look to the back of the room and I see Rob Howard walk in the room with his laptop. And he's walking towards the stage, and I'm thinking, what's wrong with Rob? He's got to be in the wrong room, because this is my room. This is where I'm going to present. And that's about the time that one of the conference organizers came to me and said, Scott, you're not in this room. You're actually in the next room. So I had one of those sort of panic moments where I just close the lid on my laptop, gather all my belongings, and start running over to the other room where I'm supposed to be presenting in about 30 seconds. And I get to the other room, I open up my laptop, plug in the video card, and there's my virtual PC. It's blue screened, because I've subscribed to this notion that virtual PCs should be run on a separate spindle. So I'm running it on a USB hard drive, and they really don't like the suspend feature of a laptop. So there's always these little gotchas when you're running virtual PC. I had to spend, the first couple minutes of my presentation sort of telling everybody, well, we still sort of waiting up for the virtual PC to boot up.
Bummer, man.
Yeah. One thing that I've had to virtualize for in the past has been to run multiple, to test a website on more than one copy of Internet Explorer. And I've gone through all kinds of crazy hacks and stuff to make IE run side by side. But one thing that I've seen recently is called IE Tester. It's a very simple little application which will render the exact same website. You can have side by side views, and you can say, I want to see it in IE 5.5 and IE 8 at the same time. And I've used it, and it actually worked. So I recommend it. I've gone as far as before. Like, I went in when IE7 was coming out, I wrote like huge registry scripts and batch files that would go in and say, okay, switch over to IE7 mode, switch over to IE6 mode. And something like this, a tool like this, is so much better. I'm So this is kind of one of the last reasons, other than testing something that I really expected to kill my machine, or a completely separate operating system, like testing out Linux or something, or someday maybe even OS X. IE was one of the last holdouts that made me install virtual machines, and I don't need to as much anymore.
So one blog I just wanted to throw out, in case you were interested in following virtualization from the products supported by Microsoft, is the Virtual PC Guys weblog. And that's blogs.msdn.com/virtual_PC_guy. He has lots of news on Hyper-V, on Virtual PC, on running all sorts of obscure DOS games under Virtual PC. It's a great blog.
While we're throwing out links, one other one that's been helpful to me is virtualization.info. And that's kind of a great news site that just tracks VMware all virtual machine products. So it's a great place to just kind of keep up on what's going on.
Microsoft doesn't have a general virtual machine kind of download section that's all collected in one area, but if you do a Google search, and you'll have maybe a live search would work too, but if you specify msdn.microsoft.com, you can find lots of pre-built IE6, IE7, Vista, Server 2008 virtual machines, so you can download and try out. The IE7, IE6, and IE8 ones are specifically made for testing and trying things out. VMware has an excellent listing of virtual appliances where a lot of companies, including, I believe, Microsoft, MindTouch and their DeckyWiki appliance, Ubuntu and several others, have pre-built appliances that you can download. They have everything from full Linux box with Rails installed to, like I said, the MindTouch's DeckyWiki installed. You can just spin up the virtual machine and use it on your intranet. There's a company that's selling virtual machine or virtual appliances, they're calling them. Some with Python installed, some with specific development environments installed. John, I know you did some work on the Mono Live CD.
Yeah, and that was great to not have to mess with anything. It just, everything was already pre-built. So
we've talked about running old software as a great use for VMs. We talked about running really, really new software as a great use for VMs. I'll throw one more use out there where I find it absolutely indispensable, which is if you end up having to write installer packages. Oh my God, trying to do that without VMware is an utter nightmare, or some virtualization tool, not just necessarily VMware. So if you're doing MSI building of any kind, save yourself a lot of hair pulling and do it in a VPC.
I've heard a really interesting use also for virtual machines, and it's not something where it really makes sense for me, but I've heard that at Microsoft they'll have the testers, the QA groups, will test in a virtual machine, and when they hit a hard fault or something, they'll just suspend the virtual machine, package it up, and give it to the developer. And the developer has access then to the entire, they've got the exact machine. So that's kind of a nice use. It's not something that I've really been able to take advantage of, but it's something that's always kind of stuck with me as something that I just thought was a really neat use of this kind of idea.
Yeah, and building on that, VMware actually has some, I think, currently considered experimental, but features for actually recording, do a continuous recording of the state of a machine, so you can actually play back the state of a machine, as it goes into a fault, for example. Kind of an interesting feature. I haven't had the opportunity to use it, but it sounds like it could be really cool.
VMware actually has a scripting API for their ESX, GSX products. Does Virtual PC have an automation interface other than COM
Yeah, they do, but it is calm, so kind of not as exciting. I'm sure you could wrap PowerShell around it, but, you know, whatever.
I wonder if a virtual PC and a Fusion, VMware Fusion on OS X have AppleScript interfaces, because it is but simple to create a scriptable application under OS X. In fact, Coco, which I believe I believe Fusion is written in Coco, and Parallels is written using Carbon.
Yeah, if you do a search for PowerShell virtual server, the first response that came back to me had information on how to manage virtual server with PowerShell, so it can be done. I haven't done it though.
Yeah, VMware Fusion is written in Coco, and it's really easy to export AppleTalk symbols for scripting. So it wouldn't surprise me if those were scriptable by AppleTalk.
I think it's only virtual server that offers COM automation APIs. I don't think virtual PC does.
No managed interface for virtual PC server, virtual server. Doggone it.
You know, that would require anybody out of developer division believing in .NET. So I think you've got trouble right there.
All right, but I've often dreamed of this vision where you have a build server that actually automate, that you write a script that, you know, creates a new virtual server using the COM automation API, and just deploys an application and runs the automated test against it. That's beautiful.
The VirtualBox, the PC descriptor files are XML. So you could, in theory, you know, just spin up your XML writer and write out, you know, a new virtual PC based off of specifications. There's a lot of places online. I'm not sure. I think VMware's are human readable as well. There's a couple of websites online where you can specify what you want in your virtual machine and it'll spit out a config file for you.
Well, we didn't have the Pariah thing going this week, which is good.
No.
The negative thing.
Oh, well, virtual machines suck. No, because we all kind of like virtualization. Even John.
I do. I mean, I do. I just
it's
think
hard
that...
not to like it, because just as geeks, it's so cool.
Yeah, it's...
I do like it, and part of it's the geek thing, where it's just, hey, this is so rad. I'm running a pretend computer, and it's a program that pretends like it's a computer. But I think, really, it does have a lot of applications. I just think that it's oversold, and it's not something where, having tried it for a period of time, I wouldn't want to show up to work, boot up my virtual machine, and run it every day. And I'm interested to hear how that works for you. Scott or anybody else, but it just really, to me, wasn't something I was happy with. It's something where I'm happy to test things out with. I'm happy to you know, do all kinds of like testing and things like that where I start it up and run it, but it's not something where I want to use it every day.
It's a drag. I tried to do that. I mean, I'm in this situation where I have to try out beta technologies and CTP technologies. I don't want to screw up my regular desktop, so I try to set up these virtual PCs, but it doesn't always. It's a pain. Between, I use remote desktop a lot. I use the clipboard a lot, and some of those things just don't work when you set up all these technologies.
So
it's a bit of a pain, but the other vision is the vision for the enterprise. So I'm in the situation where I spend a lot of time in the healthcare world, and a lot of the healthcare companies are told that they should be virtualizing servers, that they should be, you know, buy one big bulky server, and then they can run five or six of their old servers on this one virtual server, and that should work for them. But, you know, I don't quite see that happening. It just doesn't happen in a lot of
there's a lot of reasons to do that. I mean, power consumption, cooling, not to mention just physical space.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it is a trade-off. But I kind of think the whole virtual machine, the virtualization idea, has kind of been undersold. amazingly enough, just the fact that there's little small instances of virtualization that make life so much better, like being able to boot up a Commodore 64 on my Palm Pilot and play Mule on the bus. you know, if you'd have told me 30 years ago when I, not 30, but 20, Jesus, when I had a Commodore that I would have been doing that, yeah, I never would have believed it. How would you do that? How would that even work? But
that kind of scenario is great, but, you know,
it's not very imagine, practical, no.
Exactly. Imagine if you're the IT manager of a company that's managing right now 300 servers, and you're given the option of keeping these what we call pizza boxes sometimes, right? Pizza boxes are the web servers. They're just boxes you buy from Dell. You just slip them into a rack. You turn them on. You install an application. They just run. So you take that scenario versus using some virtualization technology to maybe reduce the cost of your data center. It's just still risky to a lot of the people that are trying to run the data centers that are keeping applications and keeping services alive for public companies that are responsible to shareholders these days. I think that's a completely different scenario from developers who just want to play with the latest technology.
Yeah, the last place I worked, which is a nonprofit cancer research center, we our group ran, we had one physical box and three virtual machines, virtual servers, mainly for development and testing. And we would spin up a fourth if we needed to for FDA validation. And another group there was in the process of converting their room full of hot running boxes over to either blades or virtual machines on blades. Blade servers, that is. I don't know. Maybe I'm not as familiar with the admin tools for virtual machines as I am with the simple kind of player applications. So maybe the admin tools still have a ways to go.
I think that as developers, we're all kind of focused on what can you do as developing. And really, like in the IT world, it's a little bit like magic. I mean, really, and I most of my applications in IT, somebody in IT could just set it up and run it. Like I know a lot of the time when I'll request a dev server at work, they'll give me a virtual machine. And I really wouldn't know it unless I dug around. And it works just fine. So I think in the server rooms, they can do whatever they want as long as it continues to work for me. I just care about when I'm developing.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this week's podcast. Thanks, guys. It was a good discussion. And we'll see you next week.